What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
That's cool. That's cool. I mean, he's special. But I want to. We're like the little bros right now. You know, he's just, you know, he's carrying us, which is cool. But it's not. You know, we gotta. I want to be able to end the game on defense. So that's the biggest thing.
Marlon Humphrey, that's back after the Cincinnati game, feeling like the little brother watching the offense take control of things. And since that game, the defense was much better, and they did get some turnovers down the stretch, but zero turnovers in the postseason. Caused by the Ravens' defense. They did not get a turnover against Steelers, did not get a turnover against the Bills, and the Bills getting 3 against the Ravens, part of the reason the Ravens lose that game. So heading into next season, is it possible this defense needs to ramp up its aggressiveness a little bit?
Yeah, and what, there were only a couple games this season where they produced multiple turnovers despite facing a lot of mediocre offenses and bad quarterbacks. I was talking to Bobby D about this a little bit as well. And just sort of reflecting on the season defensively. It is kind of mind-boggling it took them 11 weeks to sort it out. Right?
Like, yeah.
Thinking back on it, it's a little bit long. You know? Why wasn't Dean Pease here in the summer to begin with? There's a lot of things about the composition of the staff and how they set this up that came back to bite them in the ass, like losing to Gardner Minshew at home and, you know, costing you a more legitimate shot.
Losing to Cleveland.
At field position, at home field advantage. So there's that. And I feel like it got so bad that our expectations got so low that just the fact that they could sit back and cover two and not look like a bunch of jackasses yelling at each other was progress.
Yeah.
The fact that like they could play rudimentary zone defense 101 and keep things in front of them, we were doing backflips and cartwheels. Like the fact that there weren't guys who you identified as key pieces of your team, either this free agency or a couple back, who actually like didn't want to be on the team, and you finally replaced them with guys who actually wanted to play football for you. Like, I'm glad we got there, but that was a problem. And there was a cost to that in the overall standings, and I think it lowered the bar for us. But there is a tradition of defensive excellence around here. And Ravens defenses don't just keep everything in front of you. They help you win football games. And I feel like this defense got to a point where it wasn't costing them football games, but it wasn't producing a lot of negative plays. Like, yes, was there a huge pick six against Russell Wilson in Pittsburgh? Like, it happened occasionally. It didn't happen that often. No. And when it happened, it was usually one guy, Marlon Humphrey. And so is part of this the moving of Kyle Hamilton? Yes. But this can't just be about football 101. This has got to be about masterclass, right? This has got to be, like, it's not intro to zone defense. It should be mastermind blitzing 507. These should be master's thesis level classes, right? And I think that's what they've got to aspire to in year 2 under Zach Orr. Because there's not a lot of playmakers here, especially when you move Kyle Hamilton that far away from the ball, which they had to do from the line of scrimmage. And so you've got to generate that yourself. You've got to generate that with pre-snap motion. You've got to generate that with the looks that you're selling versus what you're actually bringing. You've got to engender that. And I don't think they did that nearly enough. And there's, yes, you cannot swing the pendulum too far one way to the other. And I'm not talking about bringing eight all the time like Wink Martindale. But when you change this all up and you make it very kind of vanilla and you play not to lose and you want to just keep things in front of you, from week 11 on, 10 times they brought more than five pass rushers. Look at what Spags is doing. Look at what these other defenses are doing. There's a time and place for everything, but there's also a time and place to go for the kill shot. Their overall blitz rate is similar to McDonald's. But McDonald did a much better job of disguising, and McDonald had Freak Show Kyle Hamilton at the line of scrimmage, and these guys didn't. I think Freak Show Kyle Hamilton's got to come back to the line of scrimmage. I think there's some personnel things they have to change, but are you with me that there needs to be more of an aggressive bent? We can't just be so scared of our own shadows and worried about guys lining up the right way next year.
Well, this defense was such an enigma when you talk about the pass rush, and all these stats are NFL Next Gen stats, so they're obviously legit. Ravens generated the eighth lowest pressure rate in the regular season, but they had the fifth highest sack rate, and they converted 24.4% of their pressures into sacks, which is the highest rate in football. So it's hard to wrap your mind around it because they finished second most sacks in football, they but I don't think any of us would say, well, wow, that was a dominant pass rush.
How many of the sacks were within 2 yards of the line of scrimmage? This isn't peak Von Miller at his prime, and you're on your back foot stepping back into a seven-step drop, and he's blowing you up, and it's 14 yards the other way.
No, but that...
It's guys running around, right, and then being dragged down within 3 yards of the line of scrimmage.
But that's the point. Eighth lowest pressure rate, but they converted the most pressure rate, you know, into those sacks, which is interesting. Another stat that I found interesting from Next Gen Stats is the Ravens used the highest rate of simulated pressure this year, and that's basically a fancy way of disguising defensive scheme. They dropped defenders from the line of scrimmage, 10th highest rate. They showed a different safety shell, third highest rate in football. But
they didn't fool anybody.
Exactly. Yeah. They were only sending four guys, and that's what simulated pressure
and
is.
And it wasn't leading to turnovers.
Exactly. So there needs to be a recalibration there.
Well, and think about the scheme and how important it is. Because, like, Justin Matabike took a major step back. Brandon Stevens fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
Kyle Hamilton took a step back in part because they had to do things to button it up. Travis Jones didn't take a step forward. Adafi Owe, the numbers look okay. He's not a super impactful football player. He's just not.
He's a nice player.
They played Robinson almost twice as many snaps as him with the season online. So that's telling you something. Ajabo didn't step forward whatsoever. Like, Ardarius Washington did.
Yeah.
Wiggins had a good season. It portends good things in the future. Wiggins wasn't a playmaker in this defense. Very few people were. I think they've got to be willing to dial things up and do things at more of a masterclass level than I felt like they were willing to do with this group. It was like a triage unit.
Also situationally, where, you know, in do or die situations, I felt like we didn't see... That's where you got to walk the line. It's not Wink Martindale, cover zero blitz, and putting your guys on an island every single time. But there's got to be situations where you send it in big-time moments.
He never brought more than six, ever. And he only brought six, again, 10 times in the last, since week 11, including the playoffs.
Yeah, you mentioned McDonald, and he had Freak Show Kyle Hamilton last year. He also Freak Show Jadeveon Clowney, which he created not only 9.5 sacks for him, but the sacks he created for other people last year. He arguably had as good a year as he's had in his career last year for the Ravens, and then, of course, what he does is he goes and gets top dollar from somewhere and ended up in Carolina. But they need to, like, Kyle Van Noy has been a godsend for them as far as getting sacks, but they need to figure out somehow somebody that is going to keep an offensive coordinator up all night as far as guys that get to the quarterback.
Well, I mean, good luck with
and
that.
That's a hard
one. You're not finding it in free agency, and you're drafting too low to usually get that guy, and they're not going to mortgage draft picks to move up and try to get that guy.
But you paid a guy in Nnamdi Matabike. He's got to be better next year.
He's got to be better next year. But, does the composition... Okay, so they saved the season in Week 12, and they got back. They went from being an embarrassment to having a lot of numbers that I think flattered them because they played nobody.
Well, they were number one in a lot of metrics.
But I think it flattered them a little bit. Do they need to take a cold, hard look about, can we run that back? is because first of all, I don't know if Dean Pease doesn't want to come back, you better go get Pagano or somebody early in the offseason, and you better fill that void with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And then as to the position coaches, if I'm listing their key guys, and the arrow did not go up on almost any of them this year, Bobby D's definition of how do I grade coaches? Mm-hmm. Who's doing better than we thought they would based on where they were drafted, what was expected of them, what they were paid? So if that's how you evaluate assistant coaches, how many of these assistant coaches should be feeling great about themselves right now?
Not good. No.
Do they need to mix that composition up and try to get a different level of aggressiveness that can be taught maybe by some other people so that this thing can hit the ground running next year and not need a 10-week, you know, a 10-week ramp up, which is kind of shameful.
Now, what happened?
More than half the season.
10 freaking weeks.
More than half the season.
They're bringing Dean Pease in week, what, October to try to, like, throw a lifeboat out there. Like, if you're trying to win a Super Bowl, that's a hell of a way to do it.
Coming up next, we get to baseball. And we hit the hot corner, and Anthony Santander off the market. Hey, the Dodgers signed another relief pitcher, Kirby Yates, today. They just seem to sign everybody. Anybody left on the market for the Orioles in free agency? We'll discuss next.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Here on the Fan. So another day and another free agent off the board. Kirby Yates going to the Dodgers. He'll join Tanner Scott, and they brought Blake Treinen back. It does sound like Kopech is going to miss the first month of the season, but they're loading the bullpen. The Dodgers are loaded everywhere. But alas, Anthony Santander going to the Blue Jays. Jack Flaherty's still out there. What is left for the Orioles?
You know what I love about the Dodgers, a real franchise, unlike the Jokers over there in the warehouse, they could sit there and say, well, Dustin May is going to be back, and Tony Gosselin's going to be back, and we've already got all these starters, so, and we've got a good bullpen even without them, so why would we do anything else? Right? Because that's the crap they sell you over here. And what did they go and do? They went and got Tanner Scott.
Yeah. And Kirby Yates, who had a fantastic year.
Hey, somebody over there, wake up. Stop picking lint out of your navel. Do your job. Maybe go get Tony Gosselin. Why don't you maybe try that? That'd be a useful arm. I bet he's better than the 36-year-old Japanese guy. I know he's pitched in the majors. Like, the lack of ambition over there makes me sick. It makes me want to vomit on my shoes. They have no drive. They have no ambition. They just want to be right with their guys.
But to be fair, it's a little apples and oranges comparing the O's to the Dodgers in terms of payroll. I mean, they're in excess of $380 million.
I'm not making that comparison. I'm making the comparison in one team that has the best talent in baseball.
And you keep adding.
And still has all these guys coming back from injury. Would rather solidify than sell you hope. And this team that spent no money ever. Mm-mm. Don't tell me for a minute with all these one-year commitments that they couldn't go get Tanner Scott.
Trust me.
And they're the baseball geniuses that couldn't find a role for Tanner Scott when he was here and couldn't fix him. But all I hear is they're so great at that. Outside of Kyle Bradish, what have they developed? What have they done?
They haven't.
So
I guess Felix
just keep
Batista?
Coming back to lack of ambition. There is no ambition. They're not industrious. They're not lifting over and sorting through everything that's possibly out there to make the high end of this roster better. They're just not interested in doing it. So they're either going to trade for a starting pitcher or they're not. I don't think they're going to. I think when they made the last two moves they made, to them, that's plenty of fortifying. So I have zero expectations for them to do anything that's not completely on the margins between now and the trade deadline.
I still think they're going to trade for a pitcher, but it's not going to be the pitcher you want. Like, it's going to be Luis Castillo. That's what I see. Like,
I think they would have done that before. I think if they hadn't just done what they did, then they would have. I think they made their choice. Their choice was trade some of these prospects for that. They've had plenty of time to assess the market.
Yeah, I hear you.
Or let's go sign the Japanese guy that we don't have to bid against anybody for. And let's go get, you know, another 30-year-old.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I do think Seattle wants to curb some payroll, and he's a guy that they probably...
And I think if they were going to do it, they would have done it. I think they would have done it before they committed another $30 million to these two starters.
I'll admit I was wrong. I still think that happens. I still think they trade for Luis Castillo. And I also think they're getting... Well, the other thing, and that takes us down a whole other rabbit hole, is signing this 36-year-old Japanese pitcher. You have to go six-man rotation because he's pitching his whole career.
Well, like, they've got 14 number three to number five starters, so that shouldn't be a problem.
That's good in poker. I told you that. You get a set of threes.
They'll sell Chase McDermott. I mean, they'll sell you all this. Yeah.
Chase McDermott should be in the bullpen.
But that's really the only question remaining. Are they going to go out and acquire a starting
pitch? Well, there should be another question. They should go get a bat.
Yeah. And that's where... That's where I feel like at this point, they obviously severely misjudged Anthony Santander's market, where you signed him basically, I think he got less per year than Tyler O'Neill. And if you were to jump
in, if you look at it by the that's not the cap, what do they call it? For how they do their revenue sharing model. If you look at the way it's computed for the revenue sharing model.
Luxury tax.
Yeah, luxury. Well, but they also do share revenue.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw the Toronto writers were saying it's basically $18 million and how it's computed. The raw dollars are higher, but the...
There's a lot of deferred, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do think it, and I got into a rabbit hole in this earlier today. People misunderstand deferred money. Every time they see deferred money, they think it's Bobby Bonilla. Bobby Bonilla got interest on his money, so he got more than he was supposed to get. If you had a choice to pay a guy $50 million tomorrow, or pay him the same $50 million over 10 years, what would you do?
Well, it's a moot point because all they do is one-year deals. No, what's the point of wasting our breath when all they do is one-year deals?
I hear you, but what I'm saying is, like, people are talking about the Chris Davis nightmare. Chris Davis was interest-free deferred money. It was advantageous to the team to pay him that way. They held onto their money longer and paid him the same money just over a longer period of time.
Yeah, where the dollar's worth less now than it was then.
What I love is the people who want to tout how much money they've spent this year. There's zero commitment. One-year deals in 1 year
It was
you're
a
back
low bar
where
to,
you were.
It's a low bar
but
to clear.
But I mean, it's a stupid. It's not an actual commitment. When you make real baseball signings, the risk is there's future guaranteed years. We're actually willing to go on a limb and say we want this guy, no matter what, to be here 2 years, 4 years, 6 years. That's the caliber of player we're hunting for. When you do it this way, there is inherently no risk because everything is a hedged one-year bet. It is a farcical way to pretend you care about winning in baseball, especially in an era where you're not winning a World Series without going through the Dodgers. And they're beating you across the board. They're beating you in international markets. They're beating you in player development. And they're going to outspend anybody they want to outspend.
Oh, let's not get crazy. They got to get to the World Series first to beat the Dodgers. Like they haven't won a playoff game yet. Like, let's get to the World Series.
You got to care about not winning a playoff game first. They don't care. The 10,000 empty seats in the playoffs did nothing to motivate this owner to make his general manager be a real Major League general manager. It did nothing. If anything, they haven't even tread water. They've fallen back in the pack.
Yeah, I don't think there's
going to be. And this is going to be a pedestrian middling season. Get your head around it. 85 wins.
Playoffs.
Well, that maybe, maybe not.
Playoffs.
Maybe, maybe not.
Maybe they need to be on the road. Home games haven't been good for them. They have not been good for them. They've lost four of them. In the last 2 years.
Didn't look too good in Arlington either.
No, it was just one game, though.
How did that go?
It was just one game.
Did not go well.
It was over in the third inning.
Yeah, that was bad. But 4-1. 4-1, Jason. Four home games, one road game. Oh, take your chances on the road, maybe.
Hey. Have some ambition.
Sign somebody.
You pathetic mooks. Come on.
Mooks.
Wake up. Wake up. You're blowing another season.
Coming up next. We get back to the Ravens. Our friend Rita Hubbard, her thoughts on what she saw Sunday. Rita joins us next here on The Fan. Ravens season is over. They lost in Buffalo 27-25. And we go out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline where our friend Rita Hubbard joins us as she does every Tuesday. And Rita, thanks as always for joining us. So have you recovered? Have you come to terms? Well, what's your main takeaway from Sunday evening?
Oh, I recovered quickly. I can't allow something I can't control to get to keep me down that long. I let the 2011 championship game do that to me for 3 days, and I was like, hey, I gotta go to work. So you know, you just gotta figure out how to, you know, get past it, and it's hard, right? We have been here numerous times in the last 7 years, and although it's a very it's a feeling that we felt often, it's still disappointing to have the same feeling every single year, right? So, you know, turnovers, I don't have it. You look at what, if you look at the stat sheet, they outplayed them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by a wide margin too. It ain't even close. What is the difference is that one guy, or one guy, meaning Josh Allen specifically, didn't turn the ball over, something that last year he was known for. Obviously this year he's been much better. And then the Ravens turned the ball over. And that's literally why Buffalo is going to Kansas City and why we are sitting here having doom and gloom time here on The Fan right now. So, I mean, you know, hopefully they can just regroup. Understand that what really is it's simple things that they got to fix, and that they are still a championship caliber team. Hopefully, you know, well, as long as Lamar Jackson is on your team, you are. That's how I feel about that. And as long as he's healthy, but I know this has to hurt. It really reminds me of the Billy Cundiff, you know, missed kick. I know it was the AFC championship game, but the feeling feels the same in terms of how it ended.
So let's get to the Mark Andrews of it all. How responsible do you feel like he is for this outcome? What are your thoughts on his lack of production in the playoffs his entire career? And the fact he didn't say anything about this to this point. He has not come forward and shared any thoughts about this with the fans through the media.
So I put the fumble, I think, to me, is more of a great defensive play than a Mark Andrews issue. He punched the ball out. That's what the defender is supposed to do. I know that he's supposed to hold the ball. I'm not saying that he's not. I'm saying that the defender did that more than Andrews fumbled the ball. Mm-hmm. So you got to give credit there. The 2-point conversion, yes, it's a little behind. You got to catch it. You got
ball hit him in the stomach.
You got to catch it. Period. It's in your lap. You got to catch it. And I know that he feels terrible about it. I'm not. Yes, his playoff success probably hasn't been great, but I'm not going to discredit what I think he led all tight ends in touchdowns this year. I'm not going to discredit him as a player because he made some mistakes. We're going to acknowledge what he did, you know, because it obviously affected the outcome of the game. But I think no one knows that more than Mark Andrews, which is probably why he's not talking to the media. I don't necessarily think that he's shying away from them in the sense of, like, I think saying it out loud, and this is me. This is a person who, me and Mark Andrews' birthday is a week apart. We the same zodiac sign. If y'all believe in zodiac, mm-hmm. right? So we Virgos.
I'm a Virgo.
We know us more than anybody. I know my faults, but it hurts even more for me to say out loud to you what I already know about myself. I wouldn't be able to come to terms with having to say out loud, I messed up. I am the one that's responsible, because he already knows that. And I'm sure that he's communicated that to his teammates, his coaches, all of those things. But then to have to go on record and say that, do I agree with how he handled it? No. But I also understand how that has to feel already, as daggering as it is living in the moment and not being able to step up in that moment. And so I hope that he can look, man, stuff like that will mess with you forever. Go talk to the lady. I'm not even being funny. Go talk to the lady. It's okay. We make mistakes. We move on. But at the end of the day, at some point, he is going to have to talk to the media, and he is going to have to publicly be accountable. But I do understand that maybe for him right now is not the time.
Rita, how do you view Lamar's performance against the Bills? A couple turnovers in the first half hurt, but he was really good in the second half.
I think that what we learned about Lamar is that whatever we thought about him going into, like, in postseason, with the whole jittery thing, I think in the first half, he didn't play well. I think that we can all acknowledge that. But he locked in the second half. And to me, Lamar stepped up and became somebody different in the second half of that game because he didn't quit. Not to say that he ever quit in any playoff game. I want to be clear about that, right? But I think in years past, if the Ravens got down, I think we would have felt compelled to be like, oh, here we go, mm-hmm. you know, like no coming back from that, because we're not used to seeing this team play from behind as much, right? And they usually panic. We've seen that. Kansas City is an example, right? But he didn't panic. He stayed calm. And he was able to make the plays that he needed to make the plays to put themselves back in position to at least tie that football game. And so I think we learned a lot about Lamar. And I think that Lamar is ready for what's next, which mm-hmm. is a Super Bowl. The only thing that's holding him back is the turnovers. And he just has to – once he figures out how to limit that, the sky is the limit in terms of him in the postseason, because I think that we learned a lot about him and his composure and how the antsiness and the jitterness now no longer affects him. He just goes out and does what he needs to do, even though, you know, he made some mistakes early on.
We're talking with Rita Hubbard's Inside Access here on The Fan, but isn't that the most frustrating part? Like, we talked all week here on this show, and I'm sure everybody said similar, like, the Ravens, if and we said it weeks ago, Jason, we were like, we're going to come in on a Monday and talk about when the season ended, they beat themselves. And then lo and behold, yep. they go out there in Buffalo, and between turnovers and drops, they beat themselves. And that, like, if they play a clean game, they might run away with that football game.
They win by 10 at minimum if they play a clean game, as far as I'm concerned, because they weren't getting stopped. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're moving the ball. They had over 400 yards of offense. They're moving the football. So it's, yes, they are not losing that football game. And I don't think it's close. I think it's two scores that they win by at that moment. But yes, this is the second year in a row, guys. I feel like last year we had those conversations when they lost. I know it's four games, but let's not count that last Steelers game. The three games that they lost, they beat themselves. The games that they lost this year, they beat themselves. Nobody has ever beaten the Ravens. And very few and far between in Lamar's era have people just flat out beaten the Ravens. It's always been them. And so I understand why people are upset with coaching, with management, because you feel like it's the same story, which, yes, it is. But I think that what we do sometimes is that we want to find a reason why it keeps happening. And sometimes it's just you don't have the reason. Sometimes you just got to be better. And I think that everybody understands that over there. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know how many lumps they got to go through to finally get it. But you hope that they've had enough. Because I heard Kyle Hamilton, you know, mention something about, oh, it adds more fuel. Well, if you add more fuel, we're going to blow everything up. I mean, I just don't understand how much more fuel you actually need. So hopefully they can get this together. But I can understand why people are so frustrated, because it's a repetitive cycle year after year after year. The Ravens continue to beat themselves, and people want to see finally them get over the hump.
Rita, you and Glenn tonight?
Me and Glenn tonight. We got book club. So
yeah. God,
there's a football game on Sunday. I don't know if y'all heard. But it's a football game on Sunday, and we're going to talk about one of their fan bases, crazy fans, what he was doing. So
Yeah. They have two football games on Sunday. But, yes.
Yeah, I forgot it's two. I might be knitting. I might knit or paint my basement. I don't know.
Nah, it's not going to be fun. Well, we'll see you around 6 o'clock.
All right, guys.
Thanks so much.
I'm actually... For the first time in my life, I really wanted Doug Williams to win that Super Bowl. But for a rarity in my life, like I actively want the Commanders to win this game.
Hmm.
Like I want to see Jayden Daniels in the Super Bowl. Yeah. Like I am like completely on board.
It just seems what he has done his rookie year is just crazy. The poison, you can go all back to that week 3 game against Cincinnati, but to go on the road against the 1 seed in a game where no one gave them a shot, for him to be that unflappable, and I also don't like Nick Sirianni, so that helps as well.
And Jalen Hurts don't look right.
I want to see this kid finish the deal. What a story, man.
Hey.
And those fans being stuck with that scumbag owner for so long.
Yeah.
Hey, if
I never root for them in anything, but I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for that kid.
Something's off with the Eagles, and I feel like if it didn't snow last week, the Rams beat them. And if Jalen Hurts can't move any better than he did the second half of that game, they got some problems.
Chuck Buck's revenge.
Yes, sir. Hey, coming up next, League at Large. We take a look at the other game. Well, that's the AFC Championship game. We'll hear from Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes in preview next here on The Fan.
You know, that's what we've worked for, is an opportunity to play another week. You know, we don't want our season to end on a loss, and this gives us an opportunity to keep going, but we'll enjoy this one. You know, a lot to learn from this one. Obviously, wasn't pretty, but these playoff games, man, you got to win by one. That's all that matters.
It's Josh Allen talking about advancing to the AFC Championship game. They beat the Ravens 27-25. And before we start discussing it, Jason, let's hear about the other side of the coin with Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes, why are the Chiefs so special?
Yeah, I mean, I think I said this a little earlier, I think one of my other interviews, and I said, Coach Reed, me, Chris, Trav kind of get all the credit, but this team is a team, and I think that's special. There's guys throughout the entire roster that make plays, and every single week, if it's Leo or if it's Trent or if it's George today or whoever it is, it's about everybody, and everybody's winners on this team, and I think that's what makes us special. So it doesn't always have to be an offensive explosion. It doesn't always have to be the defense locking it down. It's just who can find a way to get a win, and how can we do that, and I think that's what makes us a special football team. We'll try to carry that into next week.
Okay, so Jason, you've heard from both quarterbacks. Currently, the Chiefs are 2-point favorites in this football game, though we had Ryan O'Halloran on earlier, and he said he didn't care who won the game Sunday. He would have had them winning in Kansas City. Your thoughts, Chiefs and Bills, as we sit here on Tuesday?
I think the Chiefs are football geniuses when it comes to managing game situations to keep themselves in position to win. They're doing it at an unprecedented level. Patrick Mahomes is now 16-3 in the playoffs. Josh Allen's going to need to come up with a whole hell of a lot more than 147 yards total to win this game. Joe Brady is going to have to coach this game with a whole lot more heart, soul, and frankly, balls than he did that last one if they're going to go to Arrowhead and win. Running James Cook 20 times ain't going to get it done.
And the Chiefs don't beat themselves, Jason.
No. You're not coming out of there plus three, you know. And that's really how they get stops. It's not a great defense against the pass. It's not a great defense against the run. And more than anything else, reflecting on that game, your edge guys better show up, man. Like, you better get pass rush. I mean, run blitzing and all that stuff they did against the Ravens is cute. If they can't affect Mahomes somewhere close to the Texans did, I think they could. I think they run the risk of frankly getting run out of the gym a little bit. I don't buy their defense. I don't. I think it is turnover dependent. I think it's much better at home than on the road. And I think if Andy Reid comes out with an aggressive script, Josh Allen's the one who's going to turn. That team is overdue to turn the ball over. But pass rush, pass rush, pass rush, pass rush. He's not going to blitz early downs against Mahomes like he did Lamar. And if he can't get pass rush with four, and I'm not sure he's going to, they're in trouble.
And I think it's both sides, too, where we had Ryan O'Halloran on, and he mentioned the fact that they were hitting Patrick Mahomes in that first matchup where they had seven quarterback hits. Chiefs really couldn't get after Josh Allen at all in that.
Chiefs also played that game without two tackles, basically. I mean, that was the nadir of their tackle situation. They've since moved Joe Tooney to left tackle. Now, I'm not telling you that it hasn't hurt their ability to run the ball inside. I think it's hurt it significantly. But they're in a way better place pass pro-wise than they were then. He also now has Hollywood Brown to throw the ball to. He's got a fully versed DeAndre Hopkins in that offense.
Juju.
There's a lot. Noah Gray's coming off his best season. I end that game's in Arrowhead. It's not in Buffalo. I don't think that's going to be we'll see. Von Miller, they better be calling that name a lot. You know, Russo, they better be calling that name a lot. And I don't think the Bills trying to win 21-20 is going to work in Arrowhead.
The other thing is, and Tooney, yes, has solidified left tackle, but he had problems with Will Anderson a week ago. Bills don't have anybody like Will Anderson.
No. That Texans defense, that front, they've got some dudes, and it's going to require the edge guys of the Buffalo Bills for me to have the game of their lives. I also feel like they're in trouble at safety. I mean, the middle of the field was wide open for Lamar Jackson. That's another one. Zay doesn't play. Bateman's out. But when he took shots between the safeties, it was there.
And what's Taylor Rapp's availability?
That's what I'm saying. And now they're going to have nothing but box safeties back there if he can't play. Like, you're telling me he's not going to watch that film licking his chops?
Well, full disclosure, Bateman got hurt on the final drive. He got hurt on that early in the final drive, and then came back for the 2-point conversion. But yeah, there was stuff available to them in the middle of the field. The Tylan Wallace play was middle of the field.
A lot of Mark Andrews stuff was middle of the field.
The fumble, middle of the field.
The touchdowns, middle of the field.
Yes.
Those safeties are vulnerable. I just think that's a problem against Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes with all the sort of weapons available to them now and with them sorting out the left tackle situation. I think that could be problematic.
I can tell you something else. Travis Kelce ain't dropping the ball.
No.
Not in the playoffs.
Not in the playoffs.
He don't drop the ball.
It was plus 175 anytime touchdown when I grabbed it early last week. You can still find it at plus 135. I don't know that he's going to dominate like he did last week, because I think Milano and those guys between the 20s can do some things. But, I mean, this guy's got 20 touchdowns in his last 20 playoff games, and they're giving you plus 130 at Arrowhead with Taylor Swift, I assume.
Yeah.
With Caitlin Clark in the suite.
Tour's over. She's got nothing to do. She's writing songs.
I think the Chiefs are winning this football game.
Wow. Coming up next, we get back to the Terps. An ugly win against Nebraska on Sunday. They're at Illinois on Thursday. Chris Nocke, part of the Terps Radio Network, get his thoughts on Maryland basketball next here on The Fan.